super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Well, welcome to the Grindhouse, and if anybody remembers a couple weeks ago, our good buddy Gary Kent called in to shoot the stuff with us, and we had suggested he get together with John Cardos, and these guys come on, you know, live tonight, because they're the original Sons of Anarchy. So welcome back to the show, Gary Kent, and also welcome John Bud Cardos.
Thanks,
thank you very much, Gary.
You guys worked a lot together back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, we did, Bud. We did a ton of movies back in those days.
We did quite a bit, quite a few things together, yes.
A lot of them were biker films, too.
Yeah, that's where I came up with the whole Sons of Anarchy hook, because, you know, basically you guys, you know, were the great-great-grandfather of the whole genre. When you think of it, you guys were the pioneers in that whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
The Wild One started with Marlon Brando.
Yeah,
and sure.
And from there it just went boom. All directions, yeah.
Yeah, I think Corman jumped on it with the Wild Angels, and I think then it, you know, it spawned off a bunch of the AIP stuff, which, you know, I guess both you guys were involved in that, too.
Yeah,
a lot of them. You'd usually, because we both did stunts, so we'd be hauled back and forth on all those biker films to get in fights and jump off roofs and do stuff.
Then came Hell's Angels on Wheels, you know.
Angels on Wheels, yeah.
Yeah, that was like 67. That was okay. Richard Rush directed that, and he also directed, you know, The Stuntman, which you guys talk about a lot too.
Yeah. Fine.
Good
man.
Guy, Richard.
Oh, great guy. Great guy. Yeah. We have the original Hell's Angels on Hell's Angels on Wheels. Remember, Gary?
That's right. We did. We did. Sonny Barger and the boys.
And they didn't even stay in the motels. They had their own camp over the hill, remember?
Yeah.
You're laughing because you know what happened to the reporter that went over there, didn't you?
No, what happened? I know I've heard it, but...
Well, I mean, the story goes, this reporter was over there and he never even used to the Hell's Angels and stuff. And so they all figured they would do him a service, and so after he went to sleep, they all urinated on him. And that was his breaking into the Hell's Angels.
Sure.
You remember that, don't you, now?
Now I remember. Yeah, and I think it really happened, too.
It did really happen. It really, yeah. It was no
Yeah. Good. They were something. Yeah.
Yeah, Sonny was in, he did another one, Hell's Angels 69.
Yeah. He only did two where he actually let him use his name or him be really a felon, that the angels approved of it, and that lent their name to it. But Hell's Angels on Wheels was one of them. And Paul Lewis, who's a good friend of mine, the producer, said that they got Sonny by Joe Solomon. Remember Joe Solomon, Bud?
Do I remember Joe Solomon? Yes, I sure do. I remember Lewis, too. He was a good guy, you know?
Yeah, they bought Sonny a new Cadillac, and that's how they got... Sonny said, okay, you've got us for the film.
I didn't know that, yeah.
They bought him a pink Cadillac, brand new. So that's how they got, true story.
Oh, yeah, well, right.
He's also been popping up on Sons of Anarchy, too.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be done.
He was doing a cameo. Have you guys watched that?
I have watched it. I think it's a good show.
Yeah,
I think it's well done.
He's Otto's buddy that's in prison. It's I really like the show. I didn't think I would have, and then all of a sudden it was like, wow, I can't get enough of this. The acting's great in it.
The acting is incredible. I the same as you. I thought, oh, who needs more biker stuff? But then, man, it just catches you up. The guys are really good.
Yeah.
Well, they came out with a good show to start with right now, right off the bat, and I think that might start the wheels turning, so to speak, right?
Right.
So a chance there's a comeback in the works for you guys, then?
Ain't so the grandpas come back and they ride their bikes.
Pete, tell Bud what you told me about the Al Adamson remake.
I found out more. Okay, but I got to be careful of what I say, though, you know. Danny Roebuck wanted to do this, and the original thing was he was going to be Al and John Cryer was going to be Sam Sherman, which would make sense because they both were in Dudes. So somebody in South Jersey, whose name I can't mention, was supposedly going to, you know, be the director and, you know, raise the money for this. And the story I heard was that he's been taking money up front for a bunch of stuff and owes everybody, and the landlord's looking for him now. So, you know, like, oh, you, no, you email me about, you know, all this mystery about independent films. Yeah, it's another crock of shit. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you heard that before.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys have heard all the stories. There's nothing I could say or do that could top the stuff that you guys probably went through.
You know, it is as maybe I'm just a dreamer, but I, in spite of all of that, and man, it was weird. Talk about carnies and shuck and jivers. The movie business, especially independent movie. Oh my God! But it was great at the same time.
Al Adamson.
So,
I love him dearly. We both did. But for lunch, we got a peanut butter sandwich and a Coke.
Right. And we were lucky sometimes to get that. Oh, Al.
Yeah, right.
And then on one film, Todd, are you still with us?
I sure am.
Oh, good. We did one film way out in the desert that Bud hired this woman named Sherry Stewart, who was really a good cook, who could cook a gourmet meal on nothing. And so she cooked a gourmet meal, and it pissed Al off because he wanted bologna sandwiches. He didn't want any good food.
Oh, yes.
John, Gary told me a story about, I don't remember what film it was on.
Would you do me a favor?
Sure.
Call me Bud.
Will you, Bud? Okay.
Yeah, I don't turn around if somebody calls John. I don't think that's my name.
Okay. No problem.
That's okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No problem. Gary told me a story about, I forget what film it was on. It had to be one of Al's films that you had the Manson bunch on there working on Jeeps or something, and you wound up throwing Tex Watkins in the bushes or something like that.
Oh, yeah. The Spahn Ranch, I knew George Spahn quite well because we, not too far from there, was Corriganville many years ago. And I used to rent horses from George Spahn and head and tail them and ride them over to the ranch for when we would do westerns. And so when this producer, I think his name was it Al or Raphael Nussbaum, Gary, do you remember?
Al was directing. I think Raphael Nussbaum was producing.
That's what it was. Yeah, and I was doing the usual UPM and 10 other jobs. But
right.
When they said we were going to shoot at George's ranch, I said, "Hey, great! I know George real well." Now he had been blind now for quite some time, but you know, he still knew my voice and stuff. We got there, and there was all these girls around, young girls. And I went into George's house, and George was in there. And I said, "George, what is all these young?" And he just smiled a little bit and said, "Not a whole lot, you know." And finally, we got out and started doing some work and things. And we found that Manson. Here now, you got to remember, nobody knew who he was at that time, you know. In fact, I ran him off the set. He was too noisy. I ran him off the set one time up on the hill, and then another time he actually put some mufflers on one of the dune buggies that we were using in the picture. And then to find out what went on after we all left there was. I thought, holy cow, that is, you know, because all the murders happened within a week from the time we left that ranch, you know. So
yeah, it was probably going on while we were there. Who knows? Right about that time, it was all happening.
Oh yeah, yeah. But we, you know, we were just busy making movies. You know, what can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then if you remember, when I think it was right after that, I went down to Texas and I took what the hell was the cowboy's name that was in that bunch?
I know who. Yeah,
Shorty Shea.
Pardon?
Shorty Shea?
No, Shorty was the guy. Shorty lived out there and wrangled and wanted to be a stuntman. Said he was a stuntman, but this guy was the guy from Argentina.
Yeah. Oh, Juan something.
Flynn.
Yeah, Juan Flynn.
Now, this is before I knew what really went on, because I was leaving right away for Texas to do that red, white, and black thing, you know?
Right.
So he wanted to go with me. He says, well, can I go, bud? What can I do? And I said, well, hell yeah, okay. So I had him drive a truck down with somebody else. And he came down and worked all the time down there. But while he was down there is when we all heard about Manson, you know, and you know, I thank my lucky stars that we had nothing happen.
Oh man, I did something out there in the Spahn Ranch with I guess it's okay to say it, Casey Kasem and Jody McRae's son. Joel McRae's son, Jody.
Jody.
And same thing, we were shooting and Todd and Pete, what would happen while we're out there shooting, the girls would come by, he'd send them by and they'd come by and beg your lunches from you. They would say, can we have your cupcake? Can we have that sandwich? You know, that kind of thing. So we were out there and they asked us to, the girls would also flirt like mad and try and get you to come at night to their parties.
Yeah.
The only one that went was Jody McRae. And the next morning we said, well, what happened, Jody? And he said, never again. He said that he thought they were, not only were they all stoned, but that was okay because he was also. But he said that all the girls were like really scuzzy. He wasn't sure what they had.
Yeah.
That's always a plus.
Yeah, right.
I've been in some pretty bad situations, but maybe not that bad.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the frightening thing is, if you settle down and look at it, you can say, wow, they could have massacred us. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was just...
They were that crazy.
But anyhow, those things happen, I guess.
You guys were basically co-starring in Satan Sadist too, that one film that Al did that they called that one of the wildest biker films ever made, and it really pushed the envelope in terms of what was in graphic violence too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think also, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Gary, but...
No, go
I
ahead.
It was, how can I put this, very brave doing what we did of opening the picture. Can I tell you a quick story, Gary? Remember we went up to the they had a film festival for Al Adamson, his pictures up in the canyons. Remember we went up there?
Right.
Okay.
In Utah.
They had a film.
Yeah.
This, pardon?
Back in Utah, right.
Yeah, in Utah. And what happened, Gary, they were playing Satan Sadist. Now, Gary, this is a solid Mormon town. When we went up there to do pictures, the Mormon bishop worked with us and so forth. Anyhow, you got to remember, that solid Mormon town. Anyhow, we go up there, and they're going to screen some pictures for us, screen these Al Adams some pictures, and the Satan Sadist is the first one. And now, Gary and I... were sitting in the seats there, and if you remember, Gary, he said, Gary, I think we're going to get a big shot of a boob here in a few minutes or something. And he says, I don't remember when it comes. And I said, I don't either. This is before it started. The picture opens up with all these boots and everything, and Gary and I are sitting there, and all of a sudden, wham, 3 minutes into the show, the whole screen is covered with his bare bosom. And Gary and I just slid down in our seats.
There were people there with their kids, you know, on a Sunday outing. There were, you know, 12-year-olds. And here the picture starts that way, and we're going, oh, because we hadn't seen it for a long time. And,
man.
But they ended up liking it, what can I say?
Oh, the question and answers, we got up on a stage, remember, Gary? And they had the question and answers. They loved
right.
it. They
yeah,
loved
they
everybody
did.
Was doing everything but throwing hats in the air.
Yeah. So, man, I guess it was exciting for them. It was an exciting deal. You know, there's a bar here in Austin, a biker bar, that once every 3 months they rotate movies, but every 3 months they play Satan Sadus here at this biker bar. It's very popular with the crowd, I guess.
Did you get your residual yet?
No.
Oh,
you know, I never did. Excuse me, go ahead.
But I have to say that was the worst mohawk in the history of Western civilization.
Oh, I'm telling you.
That was pretty good. I got a question, though. You were directing The Dark, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you replaced Tobe Hooper for whatever reason. Now,
yeah.
I really liked that movie, but I really can't understand what it's about.
Well, you want? I'll give you the exact what happened here in that movie. I mean, it had a good cast. Don't forget, it had a pretty good cast.
Oh yeah.
You know, people: Richard Jekyll, Kathy Lee Crosby, Keenan Wynn, Robert Devine. What happened was, I did a couple of pictures. That was part of Dick Clark and Ed Montoro combination picture. They did a couple of them together. And Ed, I had done a picture for Dick and Ed before as a director, and then Ed Montoro wanted Tobe Hooper because of the Chainsaw Massacre. He says, yeah, I want him. And Dick says, well, you know, we don't know a whole lot about him, but I'd like Bud to be there to be a line producer. And oh, hell, that's good, because I've known Ed anyhow. I did pictures with Ed. So, and a long story, but short is, 3 days into the picture, Tobe was already a week behind. And so I had to take over the picture as a director. And that's what happened there. And so, but it came, I thought it turned out pretty good. I mean, it's still out there playing, I know, here and there. So, but what happened when you were saying that, the monster in that picture was supposed to have been an illiterate kid that grew up in an attic and knew nothing about the whole world. And then the building that he was in caught on fire, and he survived but was very badly burned. Now, he's quite insane and doesn't know a lot of things. Anyhow, some people found him, put him in the hospital and so forth, and he just got up and walked off. Being as insane as he was, he didn't feel the pain so much. And this is the way the story went. And then the killing started and everything because he didn't know. But then, because all the out-of-space monsters were coming in at the time, Ed decided, well, we're going to make this guy one of those out-of-space guys. So from then, The Dark, the reason I think you lost the story was because the monster changed, throwing arcs and lightning bolts and all this kind of stuff at the end, where it was not supposed to be that way at all. They just put that in there then, you know.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. I'm sitting there going, you know, I really liked it, but what the hell was it about, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been told that before. They said, hey, bud, you know, I thought you did a good job on that, but what does it mean?
I love it. I think it's a great movie myself. And I also like Mutant a whole lot because I'm a big Wings Hauser fan.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
How was it working with Wings?
Oh, Wings was a great guy, really. Yeah, he was great back in there. And Bo Hopkins was in it, you remember?
Oh, yeah.
And Bo was always, you know, he's a great guy also. So, but that's funny. I heard from Wings not too long ago. And it has been a long time, but it was good to say hi and this kind of stuff, you know. But we did that in Atlanta, Georgia, that one, you know.
But how was it?
That was another one with Dick and Ed, and I had to take that one over after less than a week. They had some director in there that just didn't cut it. So.
How was it working with Richard Jekyll? He was sort of like a character actor legend.
Yeah, he is a legend, Richard Jekyll. I can't say anything big enough or good enough for him. The man is such a professional. He was, and such a gentleman, and just a pro all the way through. You got to remember though, this guy never aged. Harder.
Yeah, I know.
If you look in some of the old pictures, he was 18 years old when he was playing in the Guadalcanal pictures and all those war pictures, and you know he was, I don't know how old he was. I never did find out. And he and I are pretty good friends. We used to go out all the time. He'd be at my house. We'd go to lunch. We'd do this and that. And but he was just a prince of a man, just a prince of a man. Lost an extremely good friend too when he passed away, but he was, and I think, you know, he was never a star, but he was certainly a dynamite supporting actor.
I remember when I a kid growing up, like they used to have the war movies on like Sunday afternoon, and Guadalcanal Diary was on.
Oh, yeah.
He was always like 19 years old to me.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, he was. He just a great guy. Just a great guy. Yeah.
Well, I also wanted to say. Oh, go ahead.
Excuse me, Todd. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I also wanted to kind of touch on the cult film that you were involved with, The Outlaw of Gore, because that's kind of become a cult classic over the years. You know, it's kind of like a midnight movie that. At the time, I don't think anyone realized it was going to be that way, but it turned out to be like one of those fun movies that you go and hang out with your friends, or you go to the movie theater at midnight and you watch this thing.
Well, that's good to hear. I personally didn't think too much about that, but that was because here, I don't know, I was got a reputation back then. If you're in trouble, call Bud, you know, because here again. They had a director. I went to South Africa to do that picture. It was Jack Palance. And Harry Allen Towers calls me. He was a producer on that picture. Cannon Films, that's what it was, yeah. And he asked me, he says, look, he says, I got a director over here. He did a picture called Gore for me. And he's supposed to do Outlaw from Gore, but I would like you to direct it, and so forth. And I said, yeah, okay. And it was here again on a short deal. I mean, a short deal for prep and everything. So they flew me over there, and so I did it. And I was, tell you the truth, I got in this, you know, after it had very short time to prep and everything. I got a little confused in it myself, really. But I guess it turned out okay. I mean, I've heard some decent things about it, but it would never say one of my favorite ones that I did. Let's put it that way.
I just
but
love
thank
it.
You. Well, thank yeah. you. I love to hear that stuff.
Well, of course, and it's like, you know, you did spend part of your life doing this, and so that, you know, it's neat to know that people appreciate it. And Jack Palance is like chewing every piece of scenery he gets near. He's just like gnawing on it. It's hilarious.
Oh, Jack is. Jack, you know, I did a thing with him called Legends of the West, and But
Emmy or something for that, didn't you?
No, I got entered into the Cowboy Hall of Fame for the best.
That's right.
For the best 1 hour special for the year. Yeah, you know who my sidekick is that went in with me on the stage? I couldn't believe it. Marino Sullivan.
Really? Wow.
I couldn't pick. Who would you pick? You know.
Wow.
But anyhow, yeah. But Jack was he's a prince, and here again, such a pro. You know, I mean, these guys are just great.
You know what?
We
needed to put Jack with Bill Shatner in Kingdom of the Spiders. We should have had them both in one movie. That would have been like a festival of awesomeness with these two actors. They could have like hammed it up together. It would have been crazy.
Wouldn't that have been something?
How
was Shatner to work with?
Oh, he was dynamite also. Great. He really was. We had a lot of fun on that picture. We did. We had a lot of fun because like Woody Strode and Tiffany Bowling, they were all great. And I mean, we'd get through with work sometimes late at night. We'd try to grab some dinner on the way home or something. The whole cast and crew almost, and we'd hit a steak joint down there in Sedona that's closing up, and they'd let us come in, and damn, we'd sit there and have dinner, and they'd fix things, and the whole crew would get together. And I remember Woody would start playing the guitar, and so he'd play a while, and then I'd play a while, and we'd all see the sun come up on Sunday morning. I mean, it was a fun picture to do that way, you know?
Wow.
It was just great. And Bill Shatner was just fantastic. First the picture there, when he's galloping real fast and he's going to rope this steer, and I had a double to actually do the roping, because, you know, I didn't think, you know, Bill never did any of that stuff, you know. And so here we got to run a traveling shot, and we're going like heck down the road there, and Bill is throwing the loop, and he threw the loop, and he caught the steer, and he yelled out, "What do I do now?"
That's awesome. You know, that movie also was another cult classic, because I know it was a very low-budget film, but at the time it was considered a pretty moderate budget from what I remember. But I know people have said that the thing was a big moneymaker. It still survives to this day. I mean, as a matter of fact, I have it on DVD. I think it's a fantastic movie. And every time I watch it, I just chuckle, and it's so entertaining. And I know that it had to have done pretty well here in America.
Yeah, it was, here again, it was nominated for 3 Academy Awards in the science fiction category. And this is a funny little story. I'll tell it very quickly. We were at the award dinners, you know, on your tuxedos and the tables and all that. I was with the producer, and Bill Shatner was the MC, and Woody was there and all this kind of stuff. And a table just next to us was just a bunch of these guys. I didn't know who they were. I honestly didn't. You know, some of them had beards and this and that and the other thing. And and at that time, they'd go through the nominations of the picture. I think Little House on the Corner was in that group, and Star Wars and several things. And I found out that very soon that it was Star Wars won the award, and it was Spielberg. I felt very honored just to be sitting at the table with them. After I found that out, that is.
Did you use a lot of real spiders on that movie?
We've used a bunch, almost 5,000.
Where did you get your spiders?
Well, there's a guy out here, and forgive me for not remember his name right now, because he was very good. He supplies that type of things for the studios, different spiders, bugs, and all that kind of stuff. And he has a place out there where that split pea place is, up the highway, you know. But anyhow, we got together with him. The first batch that came in was about 2,000. Fortunately, back then, you know, it was an insect. So, I mean, it could be killed like a fly or anything else.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you could not do anything like what I did on that picture. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it's What can I tell you? It was we did what we had to do, it's still playing out there, and it's funny. I still get a little residual every now and then from that picture.
Oh, it was a good picture. It was a good picture. I really
30 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, they just put a special edition DVD out, if I remember right.
They did because they had the producer and myself and the Spider-Man on. I did not see that edition. I know they sent me one. I just didn't look at it yet. But we did a on camera interview to go with that edition. That's what it's supposed to be, anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great little movie. I really enjoyed that. And that you know, even when I was, you know, in my heyday on 42nd Street, that was bouncing around the grindhouse a lot too.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that coming from you, sir.
Thank you. Oh, there was another one you did, Skeleton Coast. That was, I think, that was an overseas one too, right?
Yeah, that had a great cast in it too. God,
yeah, Ernie Borgnine, Oliver Reed, Robert Vaughn.
Yeah, Oliver Reed, Ernest Borgnine, and I'm trying to think of, he was the head detective in the Pink Panther that...
Peter Sellers?
No, not Peter Sellers, his boss, who went bananas all the time.
I can't remember.
That's terrible. Peter Sellers used to drive his boss mad, and he'd twitch his eyes, and he'd do all that kind of stuff. The funniest thing.
I can visualize the guy, and I can't remember his name.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that I can't either by now. But, it had a great cast in it. Did it in South Africa and West Africa. And
did not. Oliver Reed want to fist fight all the time, or was he cool?
Oh, no. He wasn't a fighter at all. No. I'm telling you, he was different. But when it came to being on the set and doing his work, he was a complete pro. I mean, he'd go out at night and have drunk, drink quite a bit, and do different things like this and that and the other thing. And he had a young wife, and I said, how do you put up with this man? She says, well, you take it for what he is. because he was a little flashy about certain parts of his body sometimes.
I've heard those stories. As a matter of fact, there's a book out you might want to check out called Hellraisers. It chronicles him, Richard Burt, Richard Harrison. I can't remember who was the other one was.
Peter O'Toole.
Yeah, Peter O'Toole. Yeah, yeah.
Peter O'Toole, Richard Harrison, and Oliver Reed.
Yeah, and Richard
Heavy Broder. Partiers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a combination.
Yeah. There was one thing in there about Burton that blew my mind. They had to do some kind of spinal surgery on him because he had crystallized alcohol on his spine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've never heard of that.
I haven't either.
Crystallized booze?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, I better put my drink down.
I've known some heavy drinkers. Oh, man, I don't know.
Yeah. You could
Biker films. What? Now I want to ask a question. The Sons of Anarchy is so well done, and I know a lot of young people today at the film classes that I go and talk to. It always gets around to those biker films we made in the '60s, and they're almost romanticized. And if you know any biker clubs really well, the outlaw clubs, they're not really romantic guys, are they, Bud? You know, and so do you think those, because none of those films from biker films from the mid-60s to the early 70s ever lost money. So they all did good, no matter how bad they were. They did great, and some of them were pretty good. But do you guys think that they really are, or am I getting highfalutin here? Did they like replace the Western? Did they really bring in a whole new genre of how we looked at men, or were they just happenstance?
No, it was. There's a whole, you know, like I say, you know, when you're dealing with grindhouse films, it's an all encompassing term, and like I call these like bricks in the wall of the grindhouse. Like the biker film is one genre unto itself,
right,
that type of thing. So, and there's still, you know, there's still, you know, Sons of Anarchy is one, you know, thing about how it's still going on, and then there was another thing that was shot, movie called Stone Cold, which had Lance Henriksen and William Forsythe as bikers.
Really,
pretty, you know, high tech, you know, comeback film. Unfortunately, it didn't do that well, from what I understand.
Yeah, wasn't there a ball player too at a league?
Yeah, Brian Bosworth. They were trying to push him as the next John Wayne or something.
Yeah.
Even I had talked to Forsythe about this. I had met him a couple times, and I said, you know, it's a shame, you know, it didn't work out. And he goes, well, you know, I tried to talk to Brian and say he should be better off working as a heavy.
Yeah. So. Man, I mean, no. Excuse me, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I go ahead and finish what you're saying.
The tremendous number of people that did, quote-unquote, biker films, from Ann Margaret to Joan Namath, you know, you can go right on to Jack Nicholson.
Well, Jack
and Bruce Dern.
Jack was with, and Bruce. Did you work on Rebel Rousers and Psych Out and Savage 7?
I worked on Psych Out, yeah. But it was not on Rebel Rousers.
Yeah. But Rebel Rousers, I don't remember if Jack was on that one or not, but...
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was. And then Savage 7, that was Robert Walker.
Robert Walker Jr., Adam Rourke,
What
a great guy he was.
Actually, yeah. Rebel Rousers had, you know, Bruce Dern, Cameron Mitchell, Diane Ladd, Jack Nicholson, and Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, some good people.
And old
really
brother there. Yeah, I was the Indian, jumped over the fences. With the horse.
Yeah, right, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was another Dick Clark co-production with somebody. Yeah. I forgot who directed that. Do you remember? If you got it on your list there?
I didn't see that. I didn't write the director down. I actually had a list. I actually did my homework.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I just
it wasn't Richard Rush. I know that.
No, Dick. No. I just can't remember. I think Chuck was on that. Chuck Bales, I think.
Yeah, he was in it too.
Yeah,
Chuck Bales. Yeah.
You know Chuck. Gary.
Oh yeah.
Gary is quite good buddies with Chuck, and so am I. Yeah. But, yeah.
You two guys, between you, had more animals than anyone I knew in Hollywood. Between you, you could start a zoo.
I didn't know Chuck had animals.
Oh, he always had mules and horses
and stuff. Oh, well,
horses. He always had like six dogs and a couple of ferrets and nothing too exotic though. You always had the weird stuff, but
thank you. I had a mountain lion there for 7 years. Yeah.
I know.
Wow. Talk about the ultimate pet.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Funny stories about those two. Yeah. I don't know if we got time for any of them.
Sure, why not?
Well, I'll tell you a funny story real quick here. I had I was doing rodeo clown work, and I wanted something to use my axe. I wanted to get an ape. You know, you've seen chimpanzees and different animals in rodeo stuff. And my uncle, he's doing a big pet shop in San Francisco. Now, I'm talking about, this is in the 50s now, late 50s. And so I said, okay. He said, I got a gibbon ape up here, but he's really my good buddy. And he says, you come on up and I'll sell him to you. So I went on up there in San Francisco. I flew up back in those DC-3s. You know, it took 2 hours to fly there in those days. And so when I got there, I'm telling this quite fast if I can. I got there, and I said, okay, we're going to take him back now. And I said, I'll get a crate and stuff. And he says, whoa, wait a minute. He says, I told you this, you know, this ape, Freddy is his name. You know, he wears clothes and everything else. He says, I can't do it. You can't put him in a baggage compartment. So I called the airlines and tried to get him on. No way. I tried the train. I tried the buses. I tried everything. And I'm saying, well, I don't know how to get by this. Well, long story of the short, this is exactly what happened. I went to a veterinarian, had him knocked out, went down and bought baby clothes and put him in baby clothes and put him in my arms and got on an airplane with my son, Freddie, with a blanket over the face, actually got on a DC-3, went into the back of the plane. It was very, not many people there, and sat down. The stewardess says, oh, come on, let us see the baby. I say, he's sleeping now. And that's what I was getting. One of the stewardesses got kind of airsick and sat right in front of me. And we're about halfway down to L.A. now. And I feel Freddie moving a little bit. Now, you got to understand, this ape don't know me from Adam. So he's not that friendly with me, really. Well, the vet said it lasts 4 hours. And this monkey ape, this ape, he was given a, started moving. And pretty soon an arm came out and reached right up and grabbed the stewardess in front of me. She let out a little tweak, turned around. Luckily, she had a monkey, so she didn't go completely ape. In about 2 seconds, the ape had the blanket off, and I had him by the hand. He's sitting there, standing on the seat, jumping up and down, going, huh, 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 huh. Well, the whole plane had a great laugh out of that, I think. But anyhow, I got a certificate from PSA Airlines for his first flight for Freddie Cardos on that airline. And that's one of my adventures with my ape. We landed in Burbank and got him in a car as quick as possible because everybody and their brother was there watching me get to come down the ramp with this ape. Now, you know, today I would have been in prison for 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Released on
no fly. That was a quick tale. I'm sorry. Are you?
No.
That's cool. How long did you have him for? But how long did you have Freddy for?
Oh, excuse me. I had him, I would say 4 or 5 years. I was living up in Big Bear at the time, and I was rodeoing out of there. There was a stock contractor down in San Bernardino, and there was one over towards down the other way, Victorville and so forth. And so I started out as riding bulls and barebacks, and I was never that good. I couldn't make any money, so that's when I decided I'd clown. And so I trained my horse, trained my mule, and I had that Freddy there. And so I had a pretty good thing going then. I knew that what I was going to get paid, in other words. So yeah. I did the clowning for about 4 or 5 years, and I had Freddy.
What did Freddy do in the act?
Well, actually, we had a cable up above, you know, and he'd sit on a barrel, and a bull's gum knocked the barrel off, and he'd go up the cable, you know,
that kind
of stuff. You know, just laughable things, you know.
Yeah, and, sure.
I would never get in. I had a partner at the time. I'd never get into barrel. I had a touch of claustrophobia, but I'd be on the outside of the barrel, and I'd have Freddy on my shoulder, and I'd push the barrel to the bull would hit it, and Freddie would go up the cable, and, you know, it was just a humorous thing like that, you know, so, but, and I got him to where he'd ride pretty good behind my horse, you know, things like that, you know, so, but, yeah, so I moved to Vegas, and was working there for a while. That's where I picked up Diane, my lion. But
yeah, I was going to say, where did that... Because I remember you used to go swimming with that lion in your pool there in North Hollywood or Van Nuys.
Oh, yeah.
Reseda.
Yeah. But at first, I had him in Vegas, so I had her in Vegas for quite a while.
Where did you get her?
Well, I had a saddle shop then, and I had I don't know, a guy just stopped by one time and had this cub. And I said, I got to have that.
Wow.
So I think I gave him $200 for him, and that, which was a lot of money back in the 50s, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
I trained her pretty well. She worked real good. And I don't know if you remember the show, You Asked For It?
You know? Sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, they somehow got touch on this mountain lion in Las Vegas that was walking down the streets with people and doing all this kind of stuff. And so they came over and did a one-hour show. It was a half-hour show. They had a full one-hour show on her.
Wow.
Called Lion as a Lady. And I I drove up in a limo driving the car from the floor, and the doorman came out, opened the door. This is at the Dunes Hotel. My lion jumped out, and he opened the door, and she went on into the hotel. Now, she was wearing like a hat.
You got to be the showman, don't you, Bud, all the way.
And I had her dealing roulette, sitting at the roulette table with a roulette hat on. I had her on a stage with 35 dance girls. And
I love it.
Stuff. We did, and believe me, we get a little drinking, and we did some funny stuff, too, on the town, but... Yeah, I'm talking too much. Let me hear everybody else say something.
No, that's good stuff, man.
Yeah. Well, I got a question for you. I just, you know, was looking at your filmography, and you were uncredited as second unit director on The Wild Bunch?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Also, I did the second unit on, I don't know if you remember the picture, it was Bruce Dern. Oh, my God. Oh, Juan Tonton, the dog that saved Hollywood. Did you?
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I didn't get credited on that either. I didn't. I thought that, you know, if you were in the DGA, that you had to get credited. But no, that wasn't true. I think now it is, but back then, if the director didn't want to give you a credit, he didn't have to, you know, back in those days. But anyhow.
That must have been a wild picture to work on.
Yeah, that was great times.
Yeah.
There was a time, it seemed, that where movies were ruled by producers, and it was the producer's movie that came out, and it was his name above the credits, and then gradually it turned around and became stars, and then, I guess, directors for a while, and now it's back to, I don't know who it is now. It's like a committee.
I don't know either. There's no good movies coming out. That's the whole problem.
Well, I like to look at these stories tonight as like a time capsule and a way to show people the difference. Like you talked about the airline story and how better times were. I mean, things weren't so politically correct to the point of strangulation. Everything was a little more open. People had a sense of humor. People had a good time. The movies that you guys made were the same way. I mean, you know, you talked about some of the screenings where, you know, people, you were afraid they might be offended, but they ended up loving it. And that's kind of the thing about not only the Grindhouse era, but the drive-in era as well, is these movies, even though they had the most shocking stuff you could imagine, there was an innocence to them and a love to them, a passion. Like, you guys were out there busting your humps for nothing to do these movies, and it really did show. It translated to us as an audience. You don't see that anymore. Everything's now a machine, and everything's tailor-made for the masses. It's like fast food in a can. It's nasty and it's junk. And I miss the days when the public used to have a sense of humor and enough intelligence to know what was real and not real.
Well, applause.
Yeah,
I
really
agree.
I'm right there with that one, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
Some of the things I'd done, I would have been put in jail for off and on over and over. And I guess, and I know Gary too, because we used to do some things together that weren't quite kosher, but people would brush them off, you know?
But, yeah. That's the whole thing is I can relate to your guys' films because that was my era and that was my attitude, whereas like today I'm looking at this stuff and going, how watered down this stuff really got, you know?
Something's gone wrong. I don't, even with the independents that are out there, supposedly here it is, straight from the street. So it's like, give me a break. I don't know what it's about. It just wanders around. Nobody, you know, it's all about possibly getting laid, maybe not, maybe Saturday night, maybe not, and that's the movie.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I mean, there's a movie out there. It's not that well known. You guys would know the actor, though. It was Victor Argo. And it was a film called The Electric Chair. And it's like this complete stream of consciousness for like 80-something minutes where he's just doing this whole bit. And you just witness a complete meltdown before your eyes. And the thing was that the guy who originally was going to play the part was Harvey Keitel. But at the last minute, he couldn't, and he told the director that there's only one man I know capable of doing this, and this is Victor Argo. It's called The Electric Chair.
It's out there now?
Yeah, I can probably get you a copy if you want to see it.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I'll get you a copy.
Me too. Or Bud, after you finish it, let me.
It's my buddy Rob. It's one of his deals. I'll get you some.
Great.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate that very much.
Does Gary have your address? Are you on Facebook or anything like that?
Oh yeah, yeah. We have each other's address.
Okay, so I'll get your address from Gary, and I'll mail you one out.
We've been. You know how long we've been Fred and Gary?
It's got to be 40 years. Got to be. Run Home Slow.
Tim Sullivan.
Tim Sullivan.
And Mercedes McCambridge.
Mercedes McCambridge. And Linda Gay Scott.
This had to be in the 50s, right?
No, it was 63, I think.
Okay.
63. Yeah, about 62 or 3.
Yeah. So we've been friends a long time.
Yeah, we got to put it that way. It's been a long time.
Oh my God, 63,
70,
80, 90.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Bud, when are you going to write a book?
Who, me?
Yeah.
You know, that's funny you ask that. I've had so many people ask me that, and I found out that I have a cousin who's a writer. And I read some of his stuff. He did a big full article for the LA Times, like 4 or 5 pages on pornography films. And I read it, and I thought, man, this guy, this kid's pretty, I could call him a kid. He's probably, but anyhow. And I didn't know him that well. And so I called him up and talked to him. And he knew me because I used to take my lion to his mother's house, for instance, when he was a little kid and stuff, and all the kids used to, when my cousin, his mother was a young lady, I used to stop by with the lion or the ape or something, always something different. So they all knew about me, And he says, so that's funny you ask that, because he is coming over next week, and we're going to sit down and discuss it. Because Gary got me interested in it, and I don't know. I could tell you a lot of tales. But
that's what works. I mean, we had Gary on the show one time. We were putting over the book, and Gary even said, that it spiked a little bit of sales there, and people have, said thanks for turning me on to his book. So definitely do it.
Well, I made up my mind now because I made up my mind. I think I'll do it. It's just when I do, you'll get a copy for sure.
Oh, cool! Thanks. I'm actually working on one myself.
You are, Pete. That's right.
Yeah, I've been at it. I've been doing a little bit every day.
Good for you. How where are you in it?
I'm all over the place. It's like I did 125 pages originally, and now I'm just like going back and like dropping stuff in where it fits, because I guess the best way to describe it is it's a weird stream of consciousness about events that took place during my life, hanging out on 42nd Street, being involved with all kinds of crazy people and stuff. So I'm just going back over it now, because you think of stuff after it happened, like, oh, that would work there, because it's just there's no cohesive narrative, just this, like a stream of consciousness thing.
I love books like that. I love that kind of narrative. Good for you, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it where it's the type of thing where no matter where you'll open it, you'll be interested. You know, that type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
you guys are the copies, too. So,
that's great. That's
yeah, I'm knuckling down with this one. So, yeah. How are we doing on time, Todd? We lose Todd?
Hello, Todd?
Todd?
I'm still here. I'm still here. You got about a minute and a half. I was trying to talk in Skype. You know how that thing is.
Yeah, I know. Well, you were typing something. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I tell you, I know nothing about this stuff. It's a new world to me.
I was trying
me
to give
too.
You a heads up. Hey, we got about a minute and a half.
Okay.
Well, you know, I don't know where this hour went, but it's been a pleasure. I'll tell you that.
Oh, my pleasure too. But I'd like to have you back on again. You know, just you know, it's been great. You know, get you
my
guys back on
anytime.
Again.
I'll
okay,
fly
cool.
out to see you. How's that?
Hey, so me and Ken Keish were talking. You know, about you know, hopefully getting you guys out again. So.
Oh, man, I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Gary and I have a good time together doing those things.
Yeah, it's a fun show. It really is.
That would be a blast.
Yeah, well,
that would
I'll,
be a
blast.
Well, okay, I'll, let's do it.
I'll keep needling. Let's do this, Ken. Let's do this, you know.
Okay. Great, Pete.
Well, it was great having you guys on, and like I said, we'll do it all again. And next week we're having the return of Primetime Amy Lee and WSU Wrestling and seeing where that's going. But until then, stay sick, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.